Chapter 5. At any one time, there were perhaps 100,000 people on Zera 23. More accurately, 100,000 humans. There might be an occasional Uri or Nigad brought in by Zera Corp in a minor mid-level management capacity to show that the company was committed to sapient diversity in its hiring and staffing practices, but they rarely stayed long. Neither Zera Corp nor its human employees did much to convince them to stay. Zera 23 was a man shop all the way through. 60,000 of the people on Zera 23 worked directly at the few hundred E&E camps, in crews ranging in number from 15 to 2,000, depending on the size and complexity of the exploit site. The majority of these people were laborers, the men and some women who operated the mining or harvesting machinery, hauled the product off of mountains or out of mines or up from wells, and a few managers and supervisors. But each site also had its support roles, including cooks, IT, janitorial, medical teams, and happy staff of both sexes. These E&E camps dotted the planet from equator to poles. They sent raw materials to Aubreytown, the planet's sole city, located on a high equatorial plateau to save the cost of a few miles of beanstalk construction. Aubreytown sent back supplies, relief crews, and coffins for some of those whom the relief crews were relieving. One could spend an entire life working at Zera Corp E&E camps, and some did. 20,000 of the people on Zera 23 worked the beanstalk in Aubreytown, taking the raw materials shipped in from the E&E camps and preparing them for transport, first up the beanstalk, and then to the ships docked at the stock shipping terminal, at geostationary distance from the planet. The ships represented the massive and inequitable transfer of raw material wealth from Zera 23 to Earth, or would if there were any native sapient species on the planet to recognize the inequity. There weren't, so it was all good from the point of view of Zera Corp and the colonial authority. 15,000 people on Zera 23 were contracted prospectors/surveyors, like Holloway. These contractors paid an annual franchise fee of several thousand credits to Zera Corp and were given a territory to survey for the company. If they found anything exploitable, and Zera Corp landed an E&E camp to exploit it, the contractor shared the wealth to the tune of 0.25% of the gross market value of the materials extracted. If your territory included rich seams of sunstones, you could get wealthy, as Holloway was about to. If it included ores or rare woods, you could make a comfortable amount. If, like most surveyors, you worked a territory that included no raw materials and a high enough concentration for Zera Corp to bother extracting, you'd go broke fast. Most survey contractors lasted a year or two before they shipped Earthside flat busted. Zera Corp required every contractor to prepay the return trip. Independent surveyors were not tolerated planetside. The remaining 5,000 people were miscellaneous, construction and maintenance crews for Aubreytown buildings and structures. Zera Corp executives and white-collar staff stationed planetside to keep track of materials and profits and support staff for said execs. A colonial authority judge and her two clerks, a well-armed, if not hugely well-trained, security detail, whose primary job was to break up the fights in the Aubreytown bars, that is, when they were not the ones starting the fights themselves. The owners and staffs of Aubreytown's 16 bars, 3 restaurants, and 1 combination general store/brothel. The medical staff at Aubreytown's 12-bed hospital. And finally, the single and somewhat lonely clergyman operating the ecumenical chapel at the edge of Aubreytown, which Zera Corp had placed next to the waste incinerator. There were no spouses who did not themselves have jobs. There were no children at all. The astute observer will have noticed that among the enumerated staff, there were none engaging in pure science. This was by design. Zera Corp's charter was for exploration and exploitation. Of the two of these, the company preferred to focus on the second whenever possible. Exploration was farmed out to the mostly hapless contract surveyors, on whom the company turned a profit regardless of whether they discovered anything useful or not. Trained scientists were not needed for this sort of exploration, merely people willing to set acoustical charges, take samples, and then feed the data into specialized machinery, which did all the hard work of science. Exploitation required engineers and other workers with expertise of a technical nature, not lab guys. Nevertheless, Zera Corp staffed 3 scientists at Zera 23, primarily to satisfy SEPA E&E charter requirements. They numbered 1 geologist, 1 biologist, and one despairing xenolinguist who had been meant to be assigned to Uriel, but through bureaucratic snafus, had been sent to Zara 23 instead. He was obliged to remain until the paperwork could be cleared up, a process that had now consumed 2 standard years and showed no sign of resolution. The xenolinguist, paid but useless, spent his time reading detective novels and drinking. Jack Holloway had met the xenolinguist once at a Zeracorp function he'd been forced to attend. He'd learned from the somewhat lubricated man everything he'd ever possibly need to know about the phonological complexities of the various branches of the Uri language tree and how the Uri's 3 ancillary tongues had an impact on each. He told his date for the function that after an hour of that, she had damn well better make it up to him. She had. She was the biologist. And the person whom Holloway was looking at now. Isabel Wangai didn't see Holloway. She was staring down at her info pad as she stepped out of her office block, and he was across the street anyway, standing there with Carl on his leash. Carl had seen Isabel, and immediately his tail started thumping like mad. Holloway checked both ways down the street. There was nothing but foot traffic. He unhooked Carl from his leash, and the dog went bounding across the street to Isabel. Isabel looked momentarily confused as a dog leapt at her, but when she recognized the animal, she let out a cry of delight and knelt to receive her daily recommended allowance of canine face-licking. She was playfully tugging on Carl's ears as Holloway walked up. "He's happy to see you," Holloway said. "I'm happy to see him," Isabel said, and kissed the dog on the nose. "Are you happy to see me?" Holloway asked. Isabel looked up at Holloway and smiled that smile of hers. "Of course I am," she said. "How else would I get to see Carl?" "Cute," Holloway said. "I'll just be taking my dog now, then." Isabel laughed, stood up, and gave Holloway a friendly peck on the cheek. "There," she said. "All better." "Thanks," Holloway said. "You're welcome," Isabel said. She turned to the dog, clapped, and held her hands out. Carl jumped up and put his paws in her hands for a double handshake. "Are you in town for a reason, or did you just travel 600 clicks so I could see Carl?" "I have business with Chad Bourne," Holloway said. "That should be fun," Isabel said, glancing over at Holloway. "You two still antagonizing each other?" "We get along great now," Holloway said. "Uh-huh," Isabel said. "I've heard you lie enough to know you're doing it now, Jack." "Let me put it another way, then," Holloway said, and drew out the sunstone he'd brought with him. "I've recently given him reason to get along with me." Isabel saw the stone, released Carl from his double handshake, and then held out her hand to Holloway. He placed the stone in it. She held it up in the sunlight, letting the crystals inside it glimmer. "It's big," she said, finally. "Not as big as some of the others," Holloway said. "Hmm," Isabel said, considering the stone again. She closed her hand around it and faced Holloway. "So you finally hit your big score." "Looks like," Holloway said. "The acoustic image has the sunstone seam 100 meters wide, and the seam kept going past the image. And it's more than 4 meters thick in places. It could be the mother lode of sunstone finds." "Well, congratulations then, Jack," Isabel said. "It's what you've always wanted." She moved to return the stone, which was now glowing faintly in her hand. "It's yours," Holloway said. "A gift, by way of an apology." Isabel arched an eyebrow slightly. "An apology? Really? And for what are we apologizing today?" she asked. "You know," Jack said uncomfortably. "All of it." "Right," Isabel said. "I'm admitting I screwed up," Holloway said. "You just can't say how," Isabel said. "That's actually an important part of any apology, Jack." Jack pointed at the sunstone. "Big rock," he said. Isabel gave a small laugh at that and handed it back to him. Holloway took it reluctantly. "It's worth a lot," Holloway said. "If nothing else, you could sell it." "And go crazy at the company store," Isabel said. "Or the other part of that edifice," Holloway said. "I think not," Isabel said. "In either part. Anyway, if I were that motivated by money, I wouldn't be a biologist. I'd do what you do." "Ouch," Holloway said. "Sorry," Isabel said. "It's a lovely sunstone, and I do appreciate the apology attempt, but I don't think it suits me." "The apology or the rock?" Holloway said. "Either," Isabel said. "I'd like a better apology when you can manage to say it. And you know how I feel about sunstones in general." "The jellyfish are long past caring," Holloway said. "Maybe," Isabel said. "On the other hand, watching Zeracorp take that hill you named after me and strip every single living thing off it because there might be some of these in it," she pointed at the stone that was now in Holloway's hand, "sort of killed the attraction for me. They didn't do it just because of the sunstones, Holloway said. They wanted the rockwood, too. Isabel stared at Holloway. That was a joke, Holloway said. Really, Isabel said, with that flatness in her voice Holloway had learned to dread and ultimately to hide from. You've told better ones. I suppose I could get you another gift to make up for it, Holloway said. What, another rock? Thanks, no, Isabel said. I liked that you named a living hill for me once upon a time. That was a thoughtful gift. A shame what happened to it. She turned, bent to give Carl a kiss on the head, and headed off down the street. There's something else, Holloway said. Isabel stopped and took a second before turning back to face Holloway. Yes, she said. Her tone indicated he'd already used up all his time with her for the day. Holloway fished out a data card from his pocket. I got a visitor to the cabin a few days ago, he said. Some sort of creature. Something I hadn't seen before. I don't think anyone's seen it before. I thought you might be interested. She was, despite herself. What kind of animal? She asked. I think you probably should just see the video for yourself, Holloway said. If it's another lizard, Zerocorp won't care, Isabel said. Not unless it's poisonous to humans or urinates pure petroleum. It's not a lizard, Holloway promised. Is the company telling you what their research? Of course it is, Isabel said. More accurately, it's telling me what not to research. Unfortunately, if I'm not cataloging lizards on this planet, I'm not doing much of anything else. I'm going to end up like Chen. Chen was the xenolinguist. Holloway moved his head, motioning to the data card. This will keep you busy, he said. I guarantee it. Isabel looked at the card doubtfully, but walked forward and extended her hand. I'll take a look at it, she said, taking the card. You'd better not be wasting my time, Jack. I'm not, he said. I've learned not to do that, at least. Good, Isabel said. It's nice that you've got something out of the relationship. It's not currently much use to me on a day-to-day basis, Holloway said, seeing that you're in town all the time now. Well, life is like that sometimes, Isabel said. We learn things too late, and then we don't get to use them. She looked at Holloway. I am sorry, Holloway said. I know, Isabel said. Thank you, Jack. She gave him another peck on the cheek, friendly again, but no more than that. And now I really do have to go. You've made me late for my lunch appointment. She patted Carl again and walked off, hurrying. Holloway watched her go for a few minutes and then reached down and clicked the leash back on Carl's collar. I think that went well, he said to Carl, all things considered. Carl looked up at Holloway with what he judged was a fair amount of dubiousness. Oh, shut up, Holloway said. It wasn't all my fault. Carl and Holloway turned their eyes back down the street, just in time to watch Isabel turn the corner and disappear.